afternoon.
Mad River Valley. It would be good if I had a microphone in front of me so you can hear me. Good afternoon, Mad River Valley. This is Jerry Procaccini with the 4-H Show. Health, harmony, happiness, and humor. And today I'm co-hosting with Amy Hornblass. Welcome, Amy, and thanks for coming. And it's good to see you.
Yes, hello. How are you? Oh, you've got me on already. Awesome.
I have you on. You're on.
You have me on
there.
How's it going, Jerry?
It's going great. Beautiful day.
Lovely
weather. So it's going really good.
Ah, great.
And today's show, first of all, we're doing things slightly different. For one thing, we're co-hosting, which doesn't happen too often, and it's always fun when it does. And we're going to talk about an issue that's coming up in the election in 2 weeks. Let me see. What's today, Friday? A week and a half, really.
Today is the last day to mail in your mail-in ballots.
Oh, thank you. I learned that from
Lucy's letter here that we're going to talk about. Yes.
Okay.
So if you're mailing in your ballot, today is the last day, but you can still vote in person.
Which I like doing.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's the democratic process. It just makes me feel like I'm doing my civic duty. Plus, things come up. And if you mail in your ballot too early and then something came up that might have made you want to change your mind about something and you've already mailed it in, it's too late. Whereas if you do it in person, you can make up your mind up to the last minute. And I kind of like that about in-person voting too.
Right. So, it gives us more time to discuss and learn about subjects, which is exactly why we're here today discussing and learning about Prop 5.
Yes.
Yes. So Jerry and I have been putting our heads together, and we've been doing some research on this. And our purpose today is to make things more clear, to clarify language, because law is a lot about language, to clarify these concepts, these legal concepts, maybe a little bit of historical context and legal context and social context. But of course, not to share our opinions. This is an issue on the ballot, and we encourage everyone always to check your facts, do your own research, make up your own mind. We just want to broaden the scope and I think because this issue, whether it passes or not, this proposition, this is going to be an issue we're going to have to continue to discuss in great depth. So my focus, you know, as a health educator, as someone who's worked with sexual and domestic abuse victims, you know, I've had to cross over this subject a lot in my work history. And so I've always found that it's the process that we use to cover these issues is so much more important than any outcome. Mm-hmm. Because we all have different points of view, we all have different experiences, and it's a very passionate issue that strong negative emotions can be attached to, no matter how you look at it.
And I totally agree. I've been kind of blown away about how passionate people are, you know, on both sides, and it just seems to evoke such emotion. More than anything else I can think of that's up for in the election right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the number one issue.
Right. And so we really are going to focus on making sure that we set the tone for these discussions, that we're going to be, you know, emotionally open to other people's points of view, not taking our negative emotions so far that we shut down and can't hear others, which is why we're also going to do call-ins.
Yes. Yeah, it's a call-in show. We'd love to have you call in and join the conversation or ask a question or state a comment. And the number is 802-496-4951. And we will be on the air until 1 o'clock, and you can call in anytime between now and then. And we look forward to your input. And meanwhile, I think we will maybe give a little background. We were talking before the show about, I think there's even some confusion about what a law is and what a constitutional amendment is, because my understanding, at least, is there is a law that protects reproductive rights in Vermont currently, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And
it is on the statute.
Yeah, I could find exactly what that law says, but here we do you know, Amy, off the top of your head, if that law has a limit on the time, like Roe v. Wade, you could have an abortion up until, I think, around 23 weeks, or when they determine that the baby can live independent of the mother, the fetus can mm-hmm. survive independent of the mother. Is that in the law in Vermont, do you know?
No, I believe, I haven't read it since last week. I had Tom Kelly on the show last week, and he is a lawyer, and he shared some information about that statute. And I did read it at the time, and it's very vague and broad. I don't remember any specifics being in there. However, it is specific to women's reproductive choices being protected. So it's specific to women and women and reproduction, meaning, you know, abortion and birth control and things. Whereas this article that we're looking at today is broader than that.
It's broader than that because women.
Because including all, so I could read it. How about if I read it real quick?
Yeah, that would be great.
This is the Article 22, which would be the 22nd Amendment to our Constitution, if it passes on the ballot in a couple weeks. If this Article 22, which is called, let me look at my...
You know, can I ask you one question, which hopefully you know, and I should have looked up before the show, but... If it passes, then it's a done deal. It's in. That's the last step.
As of midnight that night, yes.
Okay.
Right.
I just wanted to make
Amazing.
That clear.
Because it's already gone through a couple of steps, which I could explain as well, you know, that it's gone through since 2019. This has been under works. And this is the final step, is Vermonters are being asked to vote. And once we vote, if it passes, boom. We have the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution.
Which is huge.
Yeah. So it's big. And that's why we're taking the time, Jerry. Thank you, WMRW. And thank you, listeners out there. And thank you, everybody who's making this possible, because this discussion is important.
It's very important.
More information, the better, right? So this is Proposal 5 on your ballot. It's number 5. But it's actually Article 22 to the Constitution is being proposed. It says that an individual's right to personal reproductive autonomy is central to the liberty and dignity to determine one's own life course and shall not be denied or infringed unless justified by a compelling state interest achieved by the least restrictive means. Period. So it's kind of two phrases or two concepts in one sentence.
Do you want to read it one more time?
Absolutely. Article 22. That an individual's right to personal reproductive autonomy is central to the liberty and dignity to determine one's own life course and shall not be denied or infringed unless justified by a compelling state interest achieved by the least restrictive means. Period.
So if we take that article and try and unpack it, like, piece by piece, maybe, like the first individual, I'm just thinking of the differences between this article and the law that exists and Roe v. Wade, which is, I think, how a lot of this stuff came up because of the vote on Roe v. Wade. And Roe v. Wade was an article, federal, not state, but and applied to women. And that's one of the big differences, it seems to me, between that and this.
Yeah. So there are quite a few that it's Roe v. Wade. I did do some research into that to do some comparisons. Roe v. Wade, the decision, it appears, had something to do with privacy. So it was more focused on, which has more precedent, you know, an unborn fetus or a woman's right to privacy. And so there is more teasing apart in Roe v. Wade as far as the terms of the pregnancy and how viable. So we come into some real important language and vocabulary words that we're going to be teasing apart today. One of them is viability, is one of the concepts that Roe v. Wade focuses on. But our amendment here that we're considering in Vermont does not.
So when you say viability, what do you mean?
Well, what the law means is the ability to live outside of the womb.
Okay.
Yeah, how viable is this child? And it's interesting because when I was digging into into how this constitutional amendment proposal came about. It actually started before this decision on Roe v. Wade. It started back in 2018 or 2019. Hmm. Our Senate and House have already passed this, I think twice. It had to go through twice, through two different legislative sessions, so that people could have a chance to vote in new representatives if we didn't agree with how they voted the first time around. And it did pass overwhelmingly through both.
And do you know, it's always been the same reproductive autonomy. Or did they change the verbiage? Or
I'm not sure. I didn't follow it every step of the way to see where the teasing apart went. But I did find where you can look at the actual minutes of the legislative sessions to actually like listen in on what the discussion was. And when it was on the Senate floor, there was the first thing that the Senate chamber discussion back in April 4th of 2019. The Senate chamber started this discussion about this proposed amendment. And the first thing that they cited as their reasoning for this, as a reasoning of why this amendment is constitutional, is they pulled out of our Vermont Constitution, Chapter 1, Article 1. So this is our Vermont Constitution. It starts out like this, that all persons are born equally free and independent, and have a natural, inherent, and unalienable rights. And so they were using this phrase as born, and that persons, those were kind of the concepts that the Senate then went ahead to tease apart, and why this amendment is constitutional. You know, we were talking about persons. And we can talk about, so then we have to tease apart, what does a person mean?
Right.
Legally. And we can talk more about that. We can talk about what autonomy means and whether reproductive autonomy is even a legal term. You know, there are a compelling state interest. These are all words that I've done some research on to get ready for this show. I can pull any of that out at any time. But just to let people know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving legal advice.
No, all we're doing is to try and understand ourselves and maybe present to anyone who's listening what the article means, so you have a more informed choice to vote for or against. Basically, I think that's what our mission is here today.
Right.
Because I was totally confused by it.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure. I don't want to go in. We don't want to go into personal decisions, I guess. But we're just here to present information that we found about the article.
And hear from anybody out there who might have more information to share with us.
That would be great.
Because please feel free to call in and share either your personal perspective or any research you've done. Because last week we did have Tom Kelly, who's running for House in Barry. He's running for the House, for the legislature, and he has worked in the state attorney's
Vermont House,
for the city of Barry. And so he was able to give, you know, some legalese, you know, advice and information and background. But of course, he's got, you know, a strong opinion on this issue and a strong stance on this issue. So I want our listeners to know that I have reached out to Planned Parenthood to come on the show, because in last week's World, which is a newspaper that's for free from Central Vermont. Do you guys get this up in Warren?
I pick it up when I'm there sometimes, but I don't know of anywhere in the valley that carries it.
Okay. There's a letter in this World edition from Planned Parenthood, from Lucy LaRiche, who's the Vice President of Public Affairs of Planned Parenthood Vermont Action Fund. And she wrote this really nice letter to the editor, which I felt, you know, explain sort of that other side, you know, that other perspective to open the airwaves to everybody who wants to share. She pointed out some really important things. I won't read the whole letter, but if I could just read some parts. First of all, that this was a long process. This has been in the works for a while. So she said, this is Lucy speaking in her letter right now. The Reproductive Liberty Amendment was first introduced in the legislature in 2019. Since then, it has been thoughtfully considered by legislators over the course of 4 years, been discussed at two public hearings, and passed with overwhelming tripartisan support by two consecutive legislatures. So two public hearings in four years. I just found that interesting.
Because you hadn't heard of it, or
maybe that's either. Why. I would think the public, since this is such a an issue, a hot button issue. I am just surprised. I was surprised about that. So I wanted to ask her more about that. I also wanted to ask her. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, especially considering the last 2.5 years we were in the pandemic and lockdown and not a lot to do and paying more attention to stuff.
Right, theoretically,
like we
right?
We would have noticed it, but maybe not.
Of course, those 2 years also coincidentally were when most of this work was going on, right? Because if it was introduced in 2019 and then boom, boom, we're locked down in 2020, 2021, that's when it was going through the House and Senate. That's when these public... So I wanted to ask her more about that. And then I loved this part because she breaks down. She literally says, let's break down what this means, right? Because that's what you and I are here to do. So I was so excited to read this. So this is coming from Planned Parenthood. Lucy LaRiche is saying that the language in the amendment is clear. It is a proposed constitutional amendment that would protect every Vermonter's right to make their own reproductive decisions. The language was intentionally inclusive so that the amendment protects the reproductive rights of all Vermonters, no matter their gender or identity. Mm-hmm. So then she goes on to say, the right to, quote, personal reproductive autonomy has been defined through decades of case law to mean the right to carry a pregnancy to term, to choose or refuse contraception, to choose or refuse sterilization, and to choose abortion. So I thought that I really wanted to ask her about that because Tom was saying there was no legal definition. And I've done some research. I can't find an actual legal definition. So I did find some examples of case law, and it was something to do with sterilization of prisoners. And, you know, so these are things, you know, but it didn't use that phrase, that personal reproductive autonomy. I wanted to know more about that. And then she also clarified another statement that Jerry and I are curious about and we want to know more about. She went on to say, a compelling state interest, quote, compelling state interest is a directive to the courts to use the highest standard of review in order to prevent interference or restrictions on personal reproductive autonomy. Legally, a compelling state interest is the strongest protection we have to protect reproductive rights. So I really wanted her to come on and explain that because this is a little bit what she said about compelling state interest is exactly what Tom Kelly said. So that rang true, you know, that adds up, but we want to know more. Jerry and I still have questions about that.
But what she's saying, a compelling state interest, what would a compelling state interest be related to reproductive rights? I mean, what are they exactly talking about? It's what I'm a little confused by with that last sentence.
Yeah, so the reasoning I've been given from people on both sides of this argument is that phrase has been added to this amendment to give it the highest scrutiny possible. So that if somebody went to court and said, I feel like the state is overstepping its rights, it's trampling my rights under this constitutional amendment, come on, court, you know, is this a compelling enough reason for them to do this? And I have found some history in that, you know, nationally, where things like speeding, you know, speed limits have been brought to court. You know, is there a compelling enough state interest to have a speed limit? Is there a compelling enough state interest to have a curfew for young people? You know, so this is a standard that is brought to the courts, and it's held, you know, they do evaluate it that way. But I'm curious because I don't see that phrase given to any other constitutional amendment in our Constitution. Like, it hasn't ever been used that I can see in our Constitution before. So the last two constitutional amendments that the state of Vermont approved were Article 19 and Article 20, for example. So Article 19, which was an amendment passed years ago, it says the right to emigrate. It gives us, as Vermonters, the right to leave the state if someone's willing to take us. So thank you for that amendment, that we can leave if we need to.
That was nice of them.
It was very nice. I'm glad that's spelled out in black and white.
You're not a prisoner here.
Right. And then the 20th Amendment, this one's important too, I think, is the right to assemble, instruct, and petition, right? The right to assemble and petition for redress from our government.
Yeah.
So, these are both important, but they didn't add that clause to these. So I'm not sure. I mean, I'm just wondering. I would love to ask someone who knows more about this than I do, you know, what really is the reason to add it to this specific one?
But I guess where I'm confused in what Lucy is saying in her letter, I mean, it says right to personal reproductive autonomy is central to the liberty and dignity to determine one's own life course and shall not be denied or infringed unless justified by a compelling state interest. Well, that means unless this, my interpret, anyway, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, or what you think, unless the state decides that they have a reason to infringe on this right. So that's such a wide open loophole to me to the whole thing. So what if the state decides our population is growing too fast?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not allowed to have any more children. So you have to
right.
you have to end your pregnancy because it's a compelling state interest.
Which other governments in the world have done.
When I'm reading this, that's how I'm seeing as that could possibly be interpreted.
Right.
And I don't understand, like, let's say there aren't enough children.
Right.
I'm telling you, you have to have more.
Yeah, the schools are empty. We need more kids. Yeah.
It's just such an odd thing to add to that article that I can't come up with a reason why it's there.
Right. And so I did call Planned Parenthood and I asked if I spoke with Lucy Liberish's media coordinator. A woman by the name of, I've got her name right here, Eileen Sullivan. I did speak with her on the phone, and she, again, when I asked her about that, reiterated that it is the highest standard. It would put it to the highest scrutiny, and that's why it's there. And I did ask if Lucy or someone else could come on the radio show. I know it was last-minute notice, but could you please come on and help explain some of this stuff, like the legal precedent for the autonomy phrase? And she declined. Planned Parenthood declined to come on. They don't feel... let me look at my notes here.
By the way, if you do want to call in, the phone number is 802-496-4951.
Yeah, so they declined that nobody from Planned Parenthood will address these questions at this time. And she did refer me to the ACLU and the state's attorney's office. So I have put in a call to the ACLU. I've been trying to reach them. I know it's last-minute notice. They had less than 48 hours notice, so maybe they'll come on next week to see what they have to say. But I did find in that original Senate discussion that I told you about just a few minutes ago, where they originally were discussing this amendment on the floor in 2019, this is what they had to say about that phrase, that personal reproductive autonomy shall not be denied or infringed upon unless justified by a compelling state interest achieved by the least restrictive means, meaning that Vermont can regulate the right if it has a compelling interest in doing so, and the regulation is narrowly crafted to achieve that compelling interest. So that was what was said on the Senate floor. So I think, you know, what you were saying is this allowing the state to make regulation? Yes. I would think it is. I mean, what I'm reading here from what was said on the Senate floor is yes.
Yeah, you want to go, I know.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. I'll slide out of the way. I think we have a phone call,
you know,
folks.
What?
This
That's
is exciting.
Sorry, guys.
So I also
I'm going to turn that off while you're
I do want to apologize that I was not able to get an attorney on quick enough, but I did find a Senate hearing. Let me see here. What have I got here? I can play a clip for us. We can listen in with the thanks to things like Zoom recorded Senate hearing, you know.
The high-tech world we live in.
Yes. So this is one of the committee hearings where the ACLU did speak to some of our questions right here. So
great.
I can play this for us. I extracted about 5 minutes from this committee hearing where Indy Schoenhar, let me see, I've got the words right here, and Senator Rehnquist, I believe, are having a conversation. He's asking Indy Schoenhar, who is from the ACLU. She's a lawyer, I believe. I believe she's a lawyer from the ACLU. Anyway, she's testifying at this committee hearing to talk about, you know, these exact questions that Jerry and I have. So if y'all want to listen to this, let me put on device one. And I believe that this will play. I can't hear it in my headphones, so you let me know if this plays. Here we go. We're going to listen in on a hearing and hear from the ACLU right here. This is so exciting that we
this
can do
this. This is exciting.
Rosenquist.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
You can.
Yep. It just seems interesting to me that the bill is being essentially proposed to women in Vermont as necessary to protect rights under Roe versus Wade in case that decision is overturned by the Supreme Court. But Proposal 5 never mentions women, abortion, or Roe versus Wade. And why is that? It seems to me it's being specifically vague, so people really don't know what it's about.
Representative Rosenquist, is there a question in there?
Yes, I guess the question is, why does the Prop 5 not mention abortion, Roe versus Wade, et cetera?
Is this something, go ahead, is that something you can answer?
I believe I can. So Proposal 5 is meant to go beyond Roe v. Wade and the right to abortion. It is encompassing reproductive autonomy. So that's inclusive of abortion, but it is not limited to just that. And so the language of the proposal reflects that.
Thank you.
Can I follow up?
Yes.
Just seems to me that when we grant more freedoms to one group of people, inevitably we take other freedoms away from the other group. And that apparently is what happens here in Prop 5. We give women greater autonomy for reproductive autonomy, and we essentially eliminate the value of the unborn, especially those that are at viability and beyond. It just seems ridiculous to me, and we just have to say that, and I don't know if you want to respond to that or not.
Representative Rosenquist, I appreciate, and I think it's important that you state what your opinion, what your view on this is. I'm not quite clear what the question is. And if you don't have a question, we'll go to Representative McVaughn. You've muted yourself, so I'm not sure whether you had a question, whether there's a question in your statement.
I'll come back after Topper.
Okay. Back to you, Representative Rosenquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Proposal 5 doesn't specifically protect a woman's right to an abortion. It protects everybody's right to personal reproductive autonomy. Can you explain to me what a biological man's right to personal reproductive autonomy looks like and how the ACLU would defend that right? And what happens if a man's right to personal reproductive autonomy conflicts with a woman's right to personal reproductive autonomy regarding the same unborn child? Whose right prevails, and on what legal constitutional basis under Proposal 5? Thank you.
I'm not sure if I'm following that question. I think Representative McFaughn provided a good example of where a man would potentially be wanting to exercise reproductive autonomy. As for the rest of that, the question, each case is unique, and the facts are decided. The case is each case is unique, as I was saying, and the facts of those cases vary. So I don't think it would be appropriate for me to comment or like come up with a theoretical example of where these reproductive liberties would be in conflict. I can't come up with that.
It would seem like they'd be in conflict if the man wanted to the child to be born and not be aborted, and the woman said, no, we're going to abort the child. It seemed like a conflict. Then how would the ACLU sort that out?
We believe that it is the woman's right to do what they want with their body. I think that's the stance we would take on that. The reproductive autonomy of the gestational parent would come first.
But who says they come first? Because the man wants to carry on, let's say, his name, his heritage, that sort of thing, and with the birth of a child. And we're saying woman's right to autonomy, reproductive autonomy, out. How should I say it? Essentially, eliminates his.
Indy showing her. I am not a lawyer, but I play one on TV, no, in this room. But I my understanding is when rights are in conflict, we go to court. And that is the role of the courts to decide, or a judge, or however that is. And so what Representative Rosenquist, and so I guess what I'm asking is would I be correct in responding to Representative Rosenquist to say what you are presenting is a conflict of rights, and where historically this country has gone when there are conflicts of rights is we go to court and we have confidence in the court's decisions. Would I be correct in that response?
Yes, that is the correct response. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Proposition 5 doesn't mention women at all in it, so I'm still trying to understand why they would trump the situation, but thank you.
Okay.
Well, that was informative. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah.
So from listening to that, I have two concerns or questions or... It actually seems like this article makes this amendment will restrict women's rights more than add to them from Roe v. Wade, in the sense that, like she said, if the man wants the woman to have a baby and the woman doesn't want to have the baby and they go to court and they rule in the man's favor, the woman has to have the baby. Whereas if it's women's rights, then it's the woman's decision. So in a way, it's being more restrictive to women. And then it's less restrictive for the baby's rights, because Roe v. Wade had the viability line. You know, mm-hmm. once the baby can live independently of the mother, they're considered, I guess, a person or having rights, whereas this article does away with that. So,
mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Right, and it does come down to teasing apart those definitions. And I'm not a lawyer, but when it comes to the law and courts and legal definitions, a lot of times what's decided in a court based on precedent and case law and history of case law can be really far from what you and I sitting in this room using just our common sense and logic might think something means. You know,
exactly.
That those two things can be divergent. So, yeah, I found it very interesting that that Indy from the ACLU agreed with Tom. You know, mm-hmm. they both said the same thing, basically, that it's going to go to court. What Tom, our guest last week, said was that there is no legal definition for reproductive autonomy, and so to tease apart who that applies to and who has more weight when that is applied, and all of those sticky wicket issues that really is where the rubber hits the road when
yeah.
it comes to this,
it's
going to go to court.
Do you agree with my assessment of that in a way it's taking away women's rights rather than adding to them? Because
we don't know, right? We don't know how the and courts, you know, can somewhat go with public opinion. They can somewhat, you know, go. I've heard that courts' opinions shift over time as people's opinions shift over time. But really, you know, the way my ideal of a court is that it's based on truth. Right, that our Constitution is supposed to be based on truth, that these are our unalienable rights to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. They cannot be infringed upon. That's hard and fast and true. That's what the Constitution, I always thought and dreamed and idealized, is based on. And so, but when you get in there, it's way more complicated, which tells me it's not, you know, are we still based in truth here anymore, really? The further and further we get from that, the harder and harder it is for us to understand.
When it comes to this issue, I mean, it's hard. What is truth? I mean, it's just such a nuanced concept when it comes to birth and birth control. And, you know, it's just, to me, it's such an individual, personal thing.
Yeah.
But. And I don't think, as to my knowledge, there's no constitutional right to an abortion, correct? I mean, I don't.
Well, that's what they're trying to tease apart. And I believe that why Roe versus Wade was tossed out just recently, just in this last session, was because they felt it was a state's issue, that it, they weren't saying whether it's right or wrong or anything about it, but just that it wasn't their case to decide, that they threw it back to the states. So now it is, it's in our lap. My, you know, if we throw it to the courts now, if this is the last step, this amendment that we're voting on is the last step to making it true and in the, on the books. And from there, it's really not up to the people per se, it's up to the judges and the courts. And we will have to petition whenever we feel like either the state is overstepping the compelling state interest or my personal autonomy is rubbing up against your personal reproductive autonomy. We're going to have to go to court and figure that out. And, you know, so I was looking for that case precedent. Where is that history to tell us, give us some clue? How will the court decide? And I couldn't find that. I'd love to have someone come on and explain more about that.
Yeah, and if you do have any comments, call us. 802-496-4951. But when Roe v. Wade was thrown out, and I've heard people say, oh, well, that's unconstitutional. But actually, Roe v. Wade was a statute, not a Roe v. Wade wasn't a constitutional amendment.
No, it was a decision, just a Supreme Court decision on a case.
So that's basically all it was.
It set precedent, so, right, that... And it said that this, it was saying, I believe, I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is that it was deciding that that a woman's right to abortion was protected by the federal constitution. And what this recent decision said was, whoa, wait a minute, not actually. And I've actually heard an interview with, What was the justice's name who just passed away? I had her name.
Oh, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah, yes, that Ginsburg, where she actually says, I would not have voted for Roe versus Wade because she felt it was not the federal court's decision, that it should belong with the states.
Yeah.
So really, this is not, you know, I think a lot of it, too, is getting back to the truth. People are misinterpreting what is happening here. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, Roe v. Wade getting overturned does not mean we lost all abortion rights. It just means they handed it over to the states to decide. And this constitutional amendment we're voting on is not a knee-jerk reaction to Roe v. Wade being overturned. This has been in the works for a couple of years. Now, maybe they were preparing for this moment or what, but this has been going on since before that. They're really not related.
Right.
And I was able to find some, so when I went digging deep, I'm not a lawyer, but I do have a lot of experience doing research and kind of quickly skimming through and looking for the most valid sources, you know. I was looking for case precedent on this term, reproductive autonomy, you know, to kind of get to this final answer. Is there precedent? What would the courts make of it if we went there? Just to give us some clues. And I could not find many cases in court, certainly that use that phrase. Nobody's using that phrase legally that I can find. What I did find were, for example, there is a lot of social activist groups using this term. So, for example, I found National Women's Law. Where did this come from? National Women's Law Center, has a website where they're talking about our bodies, our futures, connecting abortion rights and trans and intersex rights. So this is where, you know, Lucy was saying they're using more inclusive language in this amendment to, it is broader. It's not just about abortion. It's about trans rights. It gets into all sorts of things about, let's see what they say right here. The gender and equity and reproductive rights movements are committed to ensuring that people of all genders can access the health care they need to protect their health and make their own decisions about their bodies and their futures. So they're talking about how, oh, they say right here, this is a critical moment, they say. The Supreme Court has just overturned Roe v. Wade and declared that there is no constitutional right to abortion, overturning nearly 50 years of precedent. States across the country are banning abortion. The court's decision also threatens under other fundamental rights, such as LGBTQ. And so
I just want to be clear on one point. Mm-hmm. So the connection of Roe v. Wade to the Constitution would be the 14th Amendment right to privacy.
Yes.
You're saying you have a right to privacy, so you have a right to abortion because it's protected under the 14th. Okay.
Right, which is interesting that, again, privacy is not part of what we're talking about here.
Yeah,
and so there are some, you know, some advocacy groups that have been using that term, reproductive autonomy. It's quite a bit in research. Mm-hmm. I have found quite a few research papers that are written about what is reproductive autonomy. They've come up with a scale for evaluating women's reproductive autonomy. And so you do find this phrase over and over. And you do find it even referring to legal decisions, but the legal decisions themselves don't use that phrase, which is just interesting to me, like that I can't find it. And so then I did a search in the Vermont statutes. You know, do we have a law in the books in Vermont? Is there a definition for reproductive autonomy? And when I searched for that, I came up with nothing. Zero results for reproductive autonomy. But when I looked up autonomy, just the word autonomy, I did find one statute relates to our mental health decisions, that we have a right to make our own mental health decisions and we can't be forced, you know, to take treatment that we don't want. And the second place I found it was under the Department of Health. And this was interesting, that according to the Department of Health, their general provisions, the definition of a person, because we're talking about personhood and person's rights. A person, according to Vermont statute, means any individual, company, corporation, association, partnership, the U.S. government, or any department or agency thereof.
Why don't we get an amendment amending that?
And the state of Vermont, or any department, agency, subdivision, or municipality of.
That's where our bigger problem is. Corporations are people.
Right. So when we're giving persons rights, I mean, this is, so then it gets even more complicated if we're going to have to weigh. So maybe they use the word individual.
Corporations are allowed to have abortions if this article passes.
Or compelling state interest.
Yeah,
Does that include corporation? I mean.
Oh, Jesus.
I know. It gets pretty intertwined here. But even that, those two statutes that I just taught, they don't say the word autonomy. They just came up in the search. So they're related. But legally, I'm still kind of stymied. I can't find an actual legal
term. Did you find anything that establishes when personhood is? Like, is it at the moment of conception? Legally, with the state of Vermont, when is a person a person?
Well, okay, so state of Vermont.
I wasn't sure if that was something you did come across in your research here, but that's, and it seems to me this article mentions nothing about age. Can a 12-year-old, if she gets pregnant, get an abortion without parental consent? Can they have, and when it refers to transgender, is that like certain surgeries that they want to have done? It's a reproductive autonomy, reproduction. Does that apply to those surgeries? And is there an age limit on that? Could a 10-year-old go? I mean, there's so many questions about this article, and it's a constitutional amendment. I would love to be able to find answers to all these questions before the election day.
Right. Yeah, me too. So I can address a couple of those things. First, one interesting thing I found was a book by Aaron Nelson called Law, Policy, and Reproductive Autonomy. So this was a book that Aaron Nelson published in 2013. I'd love to get a copy of this. Law, Policy, and Reproductive Autonomy. And
2013, that's 10 years ago. That's right. Interesting.
So, and I know it's 10 years ago, so something may have changed here, but she...
But just the terms that she's using, right. mean, 10 years been around. Ago, I don't remember ever hearing that until very recently.
Right. So she was kind of cutting edge, and she wrote this book to help tease this apart. So this is how she describes her book. She says, reproductive choices are at once the most private and intimate decisions we make in our lives, and undeniably also among the most public. Reproductive decision-making takes place in a web of overlapping concerns, political and ideological, socioeconomic, health and healthcare, all of which engage the public and involve strongly held opinions and attitudes about the appropriate conduct on the part of individuals and the state. Law, Policy, and Reproductive Autonomy, which is the name of her book, examines the idea of reproductive autonomy, noting that in attempting to look closely at the contours of the concept, we begin to see some uncertainty about its meaning and legal implications, about how to understand reproductive autonomy and how to value it. So she's saying in this book, it's unclear. This was in 2013, that the legal implications are unclear. What is the meaning? There's uncertainty about the meaning. This has been an area of research.
It sounds like from that hearing that you played, it's just as confusing now as it was 10 years ago, because no one seems to be able to answer the questions.
They're duking it out right now, and I guess we're giving it to the courts with this amendment. We're giving it to the courts to decide, but based on
what?
On what? Yeah.
And what has bothered me when I first read the article, I mean, I was halfway ready, I'll vote on it, and then I said, you know what, I want to learn more. I want to learn what this is. And that final sentence that says, unless a compelling state interest, what was the exact verbiage, but it's kind of opening the whole thing up to the state being able to, there it is, unless justified, determine one's own life course and shall not be denied or infringed unless justified by a compelling state interest achieved by the least restrictive means. Well, what does that mean? And compelling state interest, I mean, that to me is giving the state a whole lot of power over your life, over your reproductive rights. If you just separate out that one phrase, I mean, what does that mean?
Right. And by the least restrictive means.
And what does that mean? Well, I mean, who determines that? The state?
Well, and I did do some researching into that, you know, because that is a phrase that is used legally, and it is setting just what we've been told by everybody across the spectrum, the highest bar to any exemptions or exceptions to the rule that would be allowed. And so it just stands, and I found a lot of examples of that, explaining that it's the strictest scrutiny standard.
Because it says least restrictive means?
Well, at a compelling state interest means that they have to make a very compelling case. Like I was saying, in the case of speed limits, right?
Or how about lockdowns?
Right.
Compelling interest there.
We get into what is a compelling state interest, right?
Children wearing masks. That was a compelling state interest.
Still is.
How about vaccine mandates for public employees? That was a compelling state interest.
Right.
I mean, that just leaves the state a whole lot of power to me that they don't currently have. I mean, it's under the law, because there is a law protecting women's right to choose.
Yeah, in Vermont we do have a statute that says a woman's right to reproductive service. I'll look it up. I have to look it up.
Yeah, but I had it up.
It is specific, I remember, about women's.
Yeah. So there is the law that seems to me to be less restrictive in that sense, mm-hmm. than this article.
Right. It has no exceptions or anything like that.
No, and it doesn't say unless the state decides to come in and say you can't.
So here's a little bit more about that. Yeah. Well, this explains it more. This is from, what was this site? Wikipedia. Okay, let's go right to Wikipedia, right? Which isn't always true, but it can be pretty close. So it says here, to satisfy the strict scrutiny standard, the law or policy must be justified by a compelling government interest. While courts have never brightly defined how to determine if an interest is compelling.
Exactly.
The concept generally refers to something necessary or crucial as opposed to something merely preferred. Examples include national security, preserving the lives of a large number of individuals, and not violating explicit constitutional protections.
But who determines that it's necessary or crucial? You're really right. Leaving that up to the state. To determine. I mean, who, mm-hmm. or, you know, I guess there would be some kind of court procedure, but like I said, what they're doing is they're taking a law that protects women's rights and making it more restrictive for women. In a lot of different ways. It's the way maybe not. I'm just,
we
I'm
don't,
just trying
right.
to,
it's opening up, perhaps, maybe another way of saying it is it's broadening. The rights that women held only, you know, that were specified to women under these, maybe Roe v. Wade and these more abortion-focused laws, or not laws, but decisions, and laws, I guess, our statute, and broadening it to share those rights with a broader group. I mean, that's kind of the argument
you
that I'm hearing.
You could say that, broadening it to include men.
Men and trans women and anybody who identifies in any part of the spectrum,
yeah.
I guess.
But it's also giving the state the right, which they don't have under the law, as I read the law, to come in and control or regulate that right. Mm-hmm. If they decide it's to their benefit, to this benefit of the state, and who makes that decision. And it just seems to me the libertarian in me is a little bothered by that. And I think it's not clear and it's not specific enough.
Well, it definitely needs more discussion and clarity,
yeah.
which is why we're here today, folks.
Yeah.
We are definitely trying to get more clear because, you know, we can get kind of buried in some of this language. You know, I even found it curious that that they're saying persons, that the whole reason the Senate, you know, in their original discussion in April of 2019, they brought up our Constitution in Vermont, that all persons are born equally free and independent. Well, we talked about what persons can be defined as.
Yeah.
That according to Vermont law, persons are companies and the state
corporations
and associations. So, you know, the Masons or whoever, you
you're
know,
not Amazon,
these are persons.
You're a person.
Yeah. And so then, and you were talking about born, you know, and so a person, according to the U.S. code, is, a human being, a child, an individual shall include every infant member of the species Homo sapien who is born alive at any stage of development. So we are getting into some real, you know, where is, you know, the fetus? Where is the person?
Which is unborn. So how does that come into personhood? And, you know, if you want to, Amy, there's so much to this. I don't know. Maybe we could continue it next week and between now and then. See if we can find some case law mm-hmm. that Lucy from Planned Parenthood is talking about. And maybe even get one of these people to come on the air, because it is before Election Day. We have one more week
right.
that we could explore this issue further.
Right. And if it passes, which, you know, predictions are that it will, because Vermonters traditionally are pretty, you know, pro-reproductive rights, although the Equal Rights Amendment did not pass. Tom told me about that last week, that when Vermont was asked whether, you know, an amendment should be added to give women equal rights, it didn't pass in Vermont. I'd like to learn more about that. So these kinds of things can be you know, go directions we don't expect. But if it passes, we are going to need to keep talking about this anyway. It's not going to go away. And if anything, it's going to become more of an issue after it passes.
Yeah, but it's just exploring this whole thing with you today in the last hour. I don't see it as expanding women's rights. I see it as restricting them.
Or, yeah, and possibly expanding them to other people, but who are those other people? You know, where does this born alive, you know, breathing heartbeat, you know, we've taught, these are all parts of the definition, you know, so when people are arguing, what about the child in the situation, or what about the man, the father?
Yeah.
And then as a health teacher, if I could just throw this out there, as a health educator, if we're coming, if we really are worried about abortion, you know, if that's the core issue that people are really being motivated about, you know, when they look at this amendment, this is their motivation, is the right to abortion. You know, there are ways to prevent pregnancy. And I feel like maybe we could ramp up some of those efforts. You know, there are even, you know, for people who have been sexually assaulted, there are things like the morning after pill. I mean, I'm a health educator. That's what I taught about, which does not cause an abortion as far as I understand. It only prevents the release of the egg, you know. So maybe some more education, maybe some more. I mean, I haven't heard any campaigns to let people know about these options.
Yeah.
To prevent people from being in those situations, which are painful anyway. Anybody thinking about an abortion is not having an easy time, right? I mean, in most cases, it's something we want to avoid, having to be in that situation in the first place. Yeah. And why don't we have 100% foolproof birth control yet? I mean, why don't we? You know, so my brain goes to these questions of like, wait a minute, why? And at this point in history, are we at this point where we're talking about it in this way? I would have expected humans would have evolved a little further than this by now.
Yeah, and the other question I have about this that I'd like to find some information on is, there's nothing about children, ages, especially if they're including transgender, and I mean, children, about surgeries, I mean, and parental consent. I mean, if your 10-year-old child comes to you and says, I'm a boy and I want to be a girl, I mean, I guess all those questions come up with this article to me.
And it is valid, because I did find advocacy organizations who are promoting just this, broadening the language around these abortion laws to be more inclusive, to include choices like puberty blockers for young people. And, you know, that is, I mean, it's not... Well, it's not somebody's, you know, theory that these are some of the motivations. These actually are spelled right out. It is. Yeah. It's something we do need to talk about.
And I am all for personal choice.
Right.
But when it comes to children, it's a different story. And I think an article like this that allows for those kinds of personal choices needs some kind of consideration for children.
Right. We need to think of the children. Right. We need to think about everybody
as
we go, and what the future generations will think.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. If you're up for it, and can come in next week. Let's do that, and hopefully, you guys can think about questions and call in. We'd really like to make this a community discussion if we can.
Yes.
So, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week, and we'll talk a little more about this Article 22, Prop 5. Get as much information as you can, and be part of the discussion. Thanks for listening. Oh, one more thing I want to say that I should have said in the beginning and I didn't. Our show is actually sponsored by Whipple Tree Designs. They offer Vermont souvenir apparel for all ages, and they're located right in the Mad River Green Shopping Center in Waitsfield. And you can call them at 802-496-9694 and support our sponsors, because they're nice enough to sponsor our show.
And you are listening to WMRWLP Warren, Vermont, serving the Mad River Valley at 94.5 FM and streaming at WMRW.org.
Yep. And stay tuned. We have an hour of Hal, and then Gary Jackson comes in with a really terrific weekend warm-up show. See you next week.